everybody. This is Miles Lewis, and you're listening to PSYOP Radio on the Anomaly Radio Network. I'm your host, Miles Lewis, along with our other host, Mac White, who's on the line. Mac, you there?
I am right here.
Mac, thank you so much for joining us as usual on this Tuesday evening. We're in a dark shadow here, but
we sure are.
We're going to confront our...
Are flying at half mast.
I did not realize that, actually. I haven't been out much of the house much today. But we got a lot to talk about in the shadow of yesterday's event. So let's go ahead and jump right into that. First, the most news dominating the headlines right now, surprise, surprise, is this unfortunate situation in Virginia Tech University country, where there's been a mass shooting and the killing of many, many people. And this has the hallmark of so many other events of a similar type that have occurred over the last, at least the last 7 years, or not 8 years. The Columbine shootings back in 1999 certainly really set the tone for the last several years in terms of mass shootings, mass suicide, homicides.
You can go all the way back to, 41 years ago, the Charles Whitman Tower shootings here in Austin, Texas. And we're going to be discussing Twilight Language, and that would intersect with, JFK, James Shelby Downard being one of the writers and researchers in that field. But more particularly, these random shooters, these mass murderers, this phenomena that really only emerged, at least in the form that we know it, over the past four decades. And it seems to happen whenever there's some kind of gun control legislation being considered. And there's so many, many aspects of this. Where do you begin?
Yeah. Of course, we've got the precedent of previous school shootings and also the precedent before that in terms of sniper mass killings. And, of course, Austin itself, unfortunately, has had a tragedy associated with a sniper killing many, many people.
That's where it all began, this era of mass killings, this particular kind. And it was the Whitman Tower shootings that led directly to two things that had become fixtures on the American scene. One is SWAT teams. The other is, it led directly to the Gun Control Act of 1968, which is known to have been a almost word-for-word translation of the 1938 Nazi Weapons Act.
Well, you know, I'm thinking back to a few months ago. I guess it was right around Christmas. Remember, there was... The high school shooting hostage situation where the perpetrator molested the children that he was holding hostage.
This was the Amish school, wasn't it?
Well, no, actually, the Amish one was the second in that series, and that's one of the things that Lauren Coleman, whom we were going to be talking a lot more about, mentioned in recent blog posts at his copycateffect.blogspot.com blog page. Oh, wow, I just saw a flash of lightning outside.
Yeah, it's a little bit interesting in the sky up here in the part of Central Texas where I am. But, you know, this is dangerous radio, so we're going to forge right ahead.
Oh, there goes the thunder.
Whoa.
That took a long time. That was quite a ways away, but it was so bright. I still... God, that's a long rumble.
Hmm.
All right, well, Twilight Language of the Gods is one of the subsection titles in one of the many books by Lauren Coleman where he talks about Twilight Language. Now, Twilight Language is a kind of an ill-defined thing to me, to my mind. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it and the implications of the copycat effect and what it means for
covert operatives' ability to do psyops against the populace, I think, is a really significant issue. There's a lot of people, well, maybe not a lot, but there are some people who believe that there's good evidence that serial killings and mass killings and mass murder slash suicides or apparent suicides are in fact part of covert ops that are designed to, as Mae Brussel said, create a strategy of tension wherein there's a climate of fear created amongst the target populace that's then used to facilitate the ultimate agenda of the people pulling the strings of these covert ops. Now, it can be really difficult, I'll just say at the outset, to prove psychological operations at work in the types of events we're going to be talking about more in depth. But I think whether or not ultimately there's the hard and fast proof that most people would like to, well, wouldn't like to see, but that they think is intimated by the evidence is actually there or not, in some ways is not even the final point. It's the impact, regardless of what trigger caused it, on these events on the psychological welfare, the psychological well-being of the target audience.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very least, going to be bandied about as a way of getting through other legislation. And I was flashing back to this over the holidays when I was away from Austin and was watching the news in my hotel room about the Congress passing their torture legislation. And this was in the midst, right during the manhunt for the individual who held those kids hostage in the school, and then I think a subsequent mass search in Florida for a perp who had just killed a cop. So anyway, but one of the things we have to do in talking about these kinds of things, I think, is be very, very careful. And I was telling you, Mac, before the break, that one of the things that people, researchers like Lauren Coleman, have to offer us are guidelines or potential guidelines for how we and the media at large can do a better job of not sensationalizing these events and not triggering more copycat events. And so to that end, I wanted to just remind folks that if you are experiencing something really depressing in your life, if you need help, if you feel like you're at wit's end, there are services out there that you can contact, like suicidehotlines.com. There are 1-800 numbers like 1-800-SUICIDE, 1-800-273-TALK, which is 273-8255. You know, there are people out there ready to help you right now. So,
and these numbers are posted on our website, psiopradio.com.
Exactly.
psiopradio.com.
So,
and
Matt,
so please don't go out there and commit a mass killing. Get on the phone and talk to somebody about your problem.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm going to end up sounding like I've got a little too much humor about this, but I think everybody knows us. We often, and people in general, often laugh about things to reduce the tension. And again, that's what this is about. This is about the strategy of tension created in this country right now. And
if we work to relieve some of that tension within certain bounds of taste, then actually it's a healthy thing.
I hope so.
Yeah, let's hope.
I'd like to think so. 'Cause again, this issue of the copycat effect goes into the very issues of censorship, self-censorship. But, you know, the media have ability to help keep the public informed about things, but they also have a responsibility about not doing so in a way that just exploits their fears.
Not overplaying it, because, as tragic and horrific as what they're calling the worst shooting rampage in the history of the U.S. history, mass killings, there is much more killing going on in Iraq every day. So we've got to keep our perspective here and bear in mind that a lot of this is fuel thrown on the fire by the mainstream media, whether intentionally or not, that could have and and the evidence would seem to indicate does have a negative effect as far as propagating this kind of behavior, which, you know, I say intentionally, we have to wonder about the mainstream media. They've had a long time to study the effects of, mass panic as propagated through the mainstream media. And again, I would refer people to check out my article, Television in the Hive Mind,
indeed,
on my website, which goes all the way back to the what was a possible experiment in psychological operations in 1938, the War of the Worlds, broadcast by Orson Welles. So they know, I believe, what they're doing. That's my opinion.
That's my opinion, too. One of the things that's kind of interesting here is just this month, thanks to Lauren Coleman for, I just noticed a misspelling in the post, on the PsyopRadio.com blog post for today's show, there's a link to two recent Texas copycat press conference reports online, and one is dated from the 12th of this month, and this is at the setexasrecord.com. Press Club weighs in on copycat effect by Marilyn Tennyson. Does reporting on school hit lists and bomb threats add to the problem? Do daily news organizations empower the perp? Those were the questions discussed April 12th at the monthly meeting of the Press Club of Southeast Texas. A panel of those who make the decisions about what goes in the newspaper and on the air gave the positions their various media uses to protect the public without creating a copycat phenomena in the community. And there's a photo that's captioned, FBI agent Ann Figueres Center discusses the copycat phenomena with the Press Club of Southeast Texas April 12th. She was part of a media panel that included Brian Pearson of the Beaumont Enterprise Left and David Lowell of KFDM TV Right.
The idea I would like to throw out here is that would it not be possible for incidents to be directly created through the use of mind control individuals and black ops, with the idea that then if these incidents are publicized and hyped and sensationalized in the mainstream media, that it would inevitably lead to copycats, and I believe we saw this following Columbine, for instance, and that these copycat incidents would, the science being such of mass media, that they could count on the fact that if they create an incident, that it would then plant the seed that would be watered by the mainstream sensationalization of the incident to inevitably create these copycats in order to emphasize and to keep in the public consciousness the need for instituting the various changes and so forth that it would take to protect us from these sorts of incidents. And so I'm wondering if a good place to start here might be just to take a look at this incident itself at Virginia Tech and the irregularities there that would seem to indicate that it could have been a black op. But I would preface that by first pointing out that there have been, with regard to Columbine, for instance, indicators that that may have been a black op. We had irregularities in the autopsies of the victims at Columbine.
Different caliber weapons.
Yes, and there were indicators and eyewitness testimony for what that may be worth, that there was more than one shooters, and some of them were a bit older than this Dylan and Klebold, I think their names were the Trenchcoat Mafia guys. And you had other things, such as...
How did they get the 100 propane bombs into the school? Two guys.
The whole setup of the incident itself seems to suggest that there was assistance. And then you had these anomalous incidents, such as the fact that the son of the FBI agent in charge of the investigation of the Columbine shootings there in Colorado, his son had in the, I believe, weeks prior to the killings produced a homemade video about just this sort of thing, a shooting at high school involving a trench coat mafia, and that it in fact starred the two young men who were the ostensible perpetrators. And this is one of the links that I posted there on our psyopradio.com site. One of the links is an archive of articles that show the possibility of a conspiracy behind the Columbine shootings. And then to choose another example, there was this Larry Ashbrook, who was the shooter in 1999 at a Baptist church in Fort Worth, Texas. It had got a lot of attention at the time, and it may be forgotten by a lot of persons now, especially those outside of Texas, but this man walked into the West Ridge Baptist Church in Fort Worth, Texas, and opened fire and killed a bunch of people, and there was a big funeral there that then-Governor George W. Bush attended. But what was really interesting was what emerged in the aftermath, which were letters that Ashbrook had sent to the local media in the Dallas-Fort Worth area prior to the shootings, in which he described possible contacts with the CIA. He described kidnappings and druggings by local police, and his fear that there was an attempt to frame him for some murder that had happened. And all of these letters were described in the media as being incoherent, but if you actually read them, and the full text of these are still online, and there is a link to his letters on psyopradio.com, you'll see that they may be many things, but they're not incoherent. They may be paranoid, but they're not rambling and crazy. But, you know, you expect from a schizophrenic individual that they'd be talking about, well, you know, these Martians showed up at the back door, and you know, but no, these are fairly coherent letters, and have been pointed to many times by many researchers as being indications that there may have been some mind control there. And he had a military background. It was a discharge from the Navy. I think it was a dishonorable discharge, something that he shared with George Henard, who a few years before that, I think in 1991, committed what up until yesterday was the largest mass shooting in U.S. history. That was the Luby's Cafeteria shooting in Killeen, not far from Fort Hood, come to think of it. But he was had been in the Navy. And you go all the way back to Charles Whitman, the UT Tower shooter here in Austin in 1966, who had a Marine background. Now, we don't know really much about this Korean student in Virginia Tech, but I find it interesting that he was described by some of the witnesses who watched him as he was going around shooting everyone, reloading clips into his weapons, and it was their very clear impression that he was very well trained in the use of his shooting. And so that question has to be asked. And there are a number of irregularities. One of these articles that you posted by Michael Hoffman showed that this was something I hadn't heard yet, that
the cell phone
service, well, cell phone service was down, and so there's that. I should say cell phone service was down there on the campus.
Yeah.
And also there was, you know, what everybody now is very, you know, familiar with, the peculiar delay between the first shootings that occurred at a dormitory for about 2 hours. And this, the day after there had been a massive search for bombs, and this on a campus where on the first day of classes this semester, back in January, they had shut down the entire campus because they had a fugitive on the loose who was later shot somewhere near campus or on campus, I'm not sure. And they don't shut down the campus now. They give this guy time. And they say, well, we believed that that shooter left the campus. But why did they believe
violence.
That? Well, what indicator? You know, there are so many things here.
Well, wow. Yeah. Michael Hoffman's article just posted today is, first of all, he's also noting the synchrony of the number of dead and the age of the shooter, 33 dead, including the shooter, and the age of the shooter being 23. And the article's called 4 Points, and as you're saying, mentions the cell phone thing, which I actually had not heard, and immediately, you know, the skeptical, you know, likely devil's advocate position is that, okay, well, cell phone systems do get overwhelmed, so I did a Google search for
that is true.
Cell phone stuff, and I posted a link again at psyopradio.com, and that's about cell phones, Virginia Tech, and citizen journalism, because one of the other stories coming out now is how it was video footage shot with a cell phone that apparently was some of the first footage that was able to reach the viewing audience.
Well, cell phones were overwhelmed in New York City during September 11th, and the simple reason that people were calling family and so forth.
Yeah. That's not unusual, but again, there may be something else there because that is part of any psyop, or rather a lot of covert ops. The very first thing you want is control over communications.
At the very moment that JFK was shot in Dallas, all phone service in Washington, D.C. shut down for an hour or two, I think. So there's a precedent.
Yeah. Wow. So there's so many angles here. We're talking about you were mentioning the Austin Tower shooting, and one of the things I posted a link to was Lauren Coleman has blogged on copycateffect.blogspot.com about this incident, but he's also blogged over at his cryptozoology web blog site, cryptomundo.com, and of course cryptozoology deals with undiscovered animals or hidden animals, but it also has a Fortean anomalous aspect, that is somebody who collects strange synchronistic data or just strange data in general, and he's posted an article called Virginia Tech's Garuda. Now, those of you familiar with the recent film adaptation of the famous book The Mothman Prophecies, or the Mothman Prophecy, will be familiar with the idea of the Garuda, the idea of a winged spirit that often, in the case of the Mothman events, seems to conjunct with death. And this is one of the areas that Lauren Coleman uses to talk about the issues of Twilight Language in his books, Mothman and Other Curious Encounters, as well as The Copycat Effect. And I'd like to comment, I was going to quote from one of these sources. This is from page 166 of the Mothman book by Lauren Coleman. As Michael Hoffman has noted in his book, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, page 172, in occult crimes, the objective is not linear. That is to say, it is not solely bound to the immediate effects of the attack on the victim, but may in fact be part of a larger symbolic ritual magnified by the power of the electronic media. Same thing appears to be happening with these Mothman and Fortean events. Hoffman continues, if we are observing a ritual working, we should be looking for relevant synchronicities, coincidences that have meaning, which form a pattern. And Coleman goes on to say that, well, that's exactly what the FBI and the CIA do, mm-hmm. That they have a long history of this, you know, looking for those things hidden in plain sight.
Almost like calling cards, signs. Here you get into, you know, semiotics. James Shelby Downard's interesting research on the King Kill, as he called it, I believe.
King Kill 33.
Yes, that number 33, you know, the 33 degree parallel where Dealey Plaza, which has a lot of Masonic symbolism. It'd be take too long to get into it here, but and the fact that Waco occurred on the 33 degree parallel. Now, I don't know. I can't visualize my geography in my head. I don't know where Blacksburg, Virginia fits on the parallel, but there were 33 people supposedly killed. And the other thing is, I mentioned Waco, the time of year. I mean, here we are.
Well, that's
3 days away from the anniversary of what, Waco and Oklahoma City, the Columbine, Hitler's birthday, and something else. There's a third one, isn't there?
Yeah. This Garuda article of Coleman's, he mentions that this week opened on April 16th, which is Patriots Day in New England and Holocaust Remembrance Day throughout the world, other dates coming up soon. The Waco. Of course, Oklahoma City. So, Coleman in this post was pointing out that the mascot,
yes,
for the Virginia Tech is called the Hokey Bird is called Blacksburg's own Garuda at Virginia Tech. And again, he's not making any specific claims. He's just saying, look, I'm reporting on this strange data. Mm-hmm. And again, from the copycat effect, 16, the magnetism of milieu and moment, Lauren Coleman says, Twilight language concerns from psychology the hidden significance of locations, dates, and other signs, from religious studies, the hidden symbolism that lies in the texture of the incidents, and from criminology, the profiling insights that have revealed the ritualistic nature of certain crimes and violent incidents.
And are we talking about ritual parallels that an elite group, a secret society, Freemasonry, Skull and Bones, or whatever, would employ in order to, A, ensure the magical,
binding? Working.
Yeah, whatever, that it would work, you know, from a magical standpoint. And the other thing that those in the know would be able to read the signs and understand. It would be a calling card. I've read different things that indicate that the selection of 9/11 as the date for the terror attacks was significant, and then you had this, you know, the bombings of the trains in Madrid, which had a corresponding date to that, and so forth. And so you do have to wonder. And then I wondered if there is something that maybe is intended to work on some sort of an unconscious mass level. I mean, the collective unconscious. Here's where we get into psyops with the PSI, I think. There is this understanding, or the hope, at least, on the part of the architects of these kinds of incidents, that if they are perpetrated on particular dates in particular places with the certain symbolisms that they will be understood on a mass unconscious or collective unconscious level by the larger public, or at least by perhaps persons who have been programmed through mind control, perhaps, to respond to it as a post-hypnotic suggestion.
Well, that's certainly possible given the what we know about the CIA's MKUltra mind control programs, and this gets to that weird connection between film, fiction and nonfiction, reality and fiction. Truth is stranger than fiction. The connections between the Manchurian Candidate and the RFK assassination are startling. The background on the movie Manchurian Candidate is really interesting when you consider, as we've reported before,
the role of the
Blue Eyes.
Yeah, whole Blue Eyes.
The very, very basis of the copycat effect is exemplified by whenever films like... Christopher Walken Russian Roulette movie, Deer Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever the Deer Hunter is shown, you get this upswing in suicide by roulette in the area where that program was broadcast. And that really brings about the question, you know, what's the media's responsibility when they know that certain things are going to have certain effects? Well, you're listening.
And it's not to say necessarily that the filmmakers themselves, all of them, are aware, but perhaps certain film projects are encouraged. You posted something on one of the links there about a film called Dark Matters, which involves a Chinese-American committing some horrific crime. I hadn't heard about this film yet, but that relates to something that in one of the articles by Lauren Coleman that I read today, indicated that the profile of these types of mass killers has changed. It was the angry white male. It was, you know, that was Charles Whitman, the McDonald shooter. I think his name was Hubert D. George Renard, the Libby shooter. But then, of course, the Columbine shooters, who were young white males. But there has been a tendency for these to become young foreign men. And that was the case with the Virginia Tech shootings yesterday, a Korean student, a permanent resident.
He'd been here from, 14 years?
Yeah, for a long time. And it was the case, incidentally, with... there was an example that Coleman gave in his article, I can't remember, but this one I do remember, and I don't think it's the same example he gave. There was recently at a nearby university, the Appalachian Law School, an attempted mass shooting on that campus very recently, and I think it was, I'd have to go back and look to find the exact date, but the point is, that this shooting, which was incidentally not allowed to become as bad a mass shooting because students on the campus went and got their guns and took care of the situation. That student was a Nigerian. And then there was an incident here in Austin, which you had posted on the site there, a few links to, where a young foreign student, I forget his nationality, murdered his music professor here on the University of Texas campus.
Yeah, back in 2004.
And I'm wondering what the point of that is. Why that shift in profile? And
is that
just a random thing, or is that something that has been programmed?
Well, Coleman, and again, Coleman warns that it's important not to focus on some of these aspects too much or to make more than there may actually be there. And that's because obviously there are those groups like neo-Nazis who would just take this up as an opportunity to demonize immigrants. But he's the one saying that there does seem to be a shift, but he describes the shift as to more traditional, the idea of the outsider. Outsiders now make up that archetype for this mass killer.
Maybe there's an agenda, if we look at this as being possibly a black op, maybe there's an agenda to introduce an element of xenophobia.
Absolutely. That's the very basis of the semiotics of 9/11, according to Philip Collins, that I put a link to.
And there's been some, evidence here in the aftermath of Virginia Tech that on message boards and so forth, people have become irrationally angry against Asian Americans. There was some article or two I read with regard to that this afternoon. So it appears to, do its work.
One of the things I wanted to say earlier about the Coleman's Garuda commentary at CryptoMundo.com, and that was, then if he's pointing out the connection between the Garuda and the synchronistic mass death events, what then do we make of the Garuda of the Owl Towers in Austin and the very first, like we said, the Whitman shooting from Austin's Garuda?
Mm-hmm.
It's the UT Tower has long been described as any tower structure with a clock-like face is bound to be objectified projected.
And there's your parallel with the statue of Moloch there at the Bohemian Grove.
And of course, Austin also has the Frost Bank Tower. It's the second owl Garuda dominating the Austin skyline. I'm not sure what to make of all that again.
And
but
speaking of Austin, isn't it interesting that here in Austin, the birthplace of this type of mass shooting, it would be here today that it's been national news that St. Edward's University has been locked down, shut down, classes canceled, the entire campus has been subjected to a full day of searches due to a bomb threat.
Yeah, after you alerted me to that, I did a Google search on news.google.com for simply bomb threat, and lo and behold, all across the United States are schools being closed due to bomb threats. Campus bomb threat at UTC.
University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, correct?
Right. And then, of course, the St. Edwards and four Rochester schools closed after bomb threat from the Oakland Press. I guess it's Michigan. And Algoma School bomb threat proves false from the Green Bay Press Gazette. So,
but the attention is being focused. I mean, it was carried on Drudge Report. It's been carried on all afternoon on those ABC news breaks that they carry on Genesis. Austin, St. Edward's University, Austin. And I have to wonder why. Are they trying to, is this a sign? Is this some kind of a thing that it is felt by the media elites that needs to be reinforced in the public consciousness?
Well, again, playing up fear, trying to make everybody feel like they need more government to protect them. If there's elements of PSYOP here, that's what I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the whole, we have to have more gun control because somehow that's supposed to, lack of ability to defend oneself is supposed to represent protection. More and more, I think the media really needs to take responsibility for this and put the reins on themselves and exercise some self-control. And again, towards those ends, among the many recommendations of suicide experts are the suggestion that any reporting on these types of events, these types of mass killings, mass murder, be accompanied by reference to resources for people to help themselves if they find themselves in a similarly frantic negative psychological state. And again, I would recommend people either go online and look for suicidehotlines.com, suicidepreventionlifeline.org, and other resources. You can just use your favorite search engine to find hotlines in your area, or 1-800 numbers like 1-800-SUICIDE. That's 1-800-784-2433. You know, if you're at wit's end, you should reach out and try to get some help and not perpetuate this kind of tragedy. Whatever the ultimate origins of this horrible event of the past 24 hours, 48 hours, it's important for people to take responsibility and not view that as a legitimate outlet for their dementia, their frustration, their depression.
And there's strong evidence that this copycat effect does happen. You know, Coleman mentions that in the aftermath of the suicide back in the 70s of the television star Freddie Prinze, there was a rash of suicides on the part of young Latino males. And there's the Hemingway curse, as it's been referred to. Coleman has written about that. The fact that there have been so many suicides within the Ernest Hemingway family. Hemingway's father committed suicide, and then later his granddaughter, and of course Hemingway himself. And it's been a phenomenon since we've had a mass media, going back to the early 20th century, that whenever there was a death of a public figure, a tragic, shocking death of a celebrity that many persons idolized, whether it was a suicide or not, there would be suicides in the wake of it. I believe the first example of that was when Rudolph Valentino died. There were people who killed themselves following that. There were deaths following Elvis Presley's death, and Elvis was not a suicide, but it seemed to set in motion that kind of hysterical reaction. There were suicides following John Lennon's death. And you see examples where it's been a while now since I've heard of this, where there might be a high school somewhere where a suicide, and then somebody else in the same school does the same, and then two or three or four more, you know.
Right, and we actually haven't mentioned by title, and I should do so at this point. Lauren Coleman's excellent work on the subject is The Copycat Effect, How the Media and Popular Culture Trigger the Mayhem in Tomorrow's Headlines, and it really is an indictment of the media complex. And while many of the events in this tome would make any parapolitical conspiracy researcher, you know, raise their eyebrows as if to say, well, yeah, these may be copycat phenomena, but some of these seem to have involved actual black ops, whether it be the Jonestown massacre, mass suicide, or Heaven's Gate, or other events. But the fact is that there are these connections between mass media, movies, television, and whatnot, and people's behaviors. I think you mentioned before, well, actually, maybe you didn't mention before, the Lubies. Did you mention the Lubies?
Briefly, yes, yeah.
I was just flipping through The Copycat Effect by Lauren Coleman, where he, under a subheading, copycatting the movies, talks about, you know, the rise of teen stunt shows like Jackass. The example of course, Stanley Kubrick's Clockwork Orange, where he, because there were copycat crimes imitating events in that film, had it pulled from distribution.
Yes.
Coleman goes on to report about George Hennard, George Hennard of Luby's Cafeteria Massacre, and how, you know, he's the guy who on October 16th, 91, drove his 87 Ford Ranger pickup truck into Luby's Cafeteria in Killeen and basically screamed, "This is what Bell County has done to me," while opening fire and killing many, many people. At the time, this was the worst mass murder in U.S. history. On Hennard's dead body, police found a ticket for The Fisher King, a 1991 Robin Williams movie in which Jeff Bridges is the shock jock radio DJ, Jack Lucas, one of whose fans takes Lucas's rants literally and goes to a fancy restaurant with a gun, murdering guiltless diners.
Mm-hmm.
The movie's massacre resembles one carried out by Hennard.
And I recall, after the UT tower shootings in 1966, reading news stories in the year or two following about mass shootings, not into the magnitude that occurred on the UT campus, but I had never read stories of this kind before that were new. One, for instance, sticks out of my mind. Now, the UT tower shooting happened in the summer of 66. That was the summer before I started the eighth grade. I remember hearing about it. I was sitting on my front porch in Cleburne, Texas, listening to my transistor radio, listening to the latest Beatles song and whatever, and they suddenly break into the show describing that what was happening down here at that time in Austin. And I then distinctly recall reading later a news story while I was in the eighth grade and discussing it with one of my teachers, how a young man had wandered into a beauty salon in Arizona somewhere and for no reason, at all, killed everyone in the salon. Six or seven people. And there were, others during that period of time. And it seemed to introduce, would you call it a meme or something? But that was the first scene of a copycat effect. And I tell you, I cannot think of any incidents like that, mass sniper shootings and so forth prior to Whitman, but that ushered in this whole era. I have to suspect that Whitman might have been manipulated in some way through mind control possibly, and that that subsequently these other incidents were copycats, and that those who engineer black ops and those in the media who orchestrate their part of it are fully aware of that, but they have had just about almost a century of studying the effects of the mass media and what it can do and how people are affected. You hear about kids doing crazy things after watching something on television.
Wrestling.
Yeah, I remember there were kids who would get it into their heads back in the, when the Superman television series was on in the 50s and early 60s, that they could, put a red towel on themselves as a cape and jump off the top of the house. Things like that would happen because there is this, part of the reptile mind that believes what it sees, and it's more pronounced in children, but it can't distinguish between what's fictional reality put out there for entertainment and what's real, but it would follow then that it's not just children but unbalanced individuals who are not able to distinguish between fiction and reality either, and so they are susceptible to copy what they see on in films and so forth to one degree or another. But you turn that into a news story and just hype it for days and days and days on end, and there would be unstable individuals out there who would be susceptible to that as a type of programming.
Indeed. I think the video game and the computer military industrial complex also is playing a large part in this as well. I definitely think that violent video games and just the rise of violence in our culture is desensitizing us en masse to different levels of violence, and including torture. I know we've talked about that a lot, and how so many of the events in the news and as well as television shows like 24 seem to be designed as psyops to get Americans behind torture, you know. And I think that there's a general decline in this country's morality that's being influenced by these sorts of things.
Yes, and the line between entertainment and news is becoming more and more blurred. And also, I believe that there are a great many of people who I don't think they're fully capable of perceiving the real world as being anything other than a movie, a television show. That there's a shallowness of experience or perception. There's an incident I remember that my wife experienced a few years ago, and it's typical of other instances of this type that I've heard about, people have told me that they've seen, is that she went into a Walgreens drugstore up in North Austin, and as she got out of her car, a terrible accident happened on the street. It was North Lamar, right out in front. It was terrible. There was, she could tell immediately there was an older man who was very hurt. She ran inside the store. This is before she had a cell phone, so she couldn't make a call herself. She ran inside, tried to find someone there that operated that worked at the store, a manager or somebody, to get on the phone and call 911. And she was adamant that there was an emergency outside, and everyone in the store just stared at her with this blank look, a paralyzed expression, a deer in the headlights look. But more than that, she said it was as if they didn't really see it as anything real or anything that had anything to do with them, and they went outside and they looked at this terrible aftermath of this accident, and there was just this dull, slack-jawed look in their face like they were watching something on television.
Well, and this gets to what I guess some people might call the Matrix defense, and that is that part of this video game culture, part of this ultra-violent media culture that we live in, and as exemplified by the Matrix movies, really cashes in on a lot of outsiders' angst over the sense of being alienated from the rest of reality, the rest of humanity, and being drifting within that virtual reality, that illusoriness of a real significant life. And in the case of the Beltway snipers, again, another example of probable psyops, the possible connections or the resonance with descriptions in the Northwoods document about the idea of there being sniper attacks and terror attacks in Miami and Washington, D.C., found resonance in the reality of the sniper attacks that happened, you know, within a year or so of 9/11.
Yeah.
And I have the two alleged perpetrators, the older man and the younger boy, their defense was reason of insanity, and I believe they specifically were citing The Matrix. I was looking for that reference in here, in the copycat effect, because I know I saw it in here. But
I saw it myself, but I forget exactly where. Yeah.
So, one of the other things that, well, I just realized we're getting close to the top of the hour here. I know we talked about going a little over today. Mac, are you up for that? I'm 50-50 on it.
I'm 50-50 as well.
I was just gonna say that to continue that with the Matrix thing real quickly here, maybe before we quit for the hour. That I remember distinctly after The Matrix, and after I was worried immediately upon seeing The Matrix that as much as I identified with elements of the movie as a really, again, kind of tapping into my own angst and alienation in this reality, in this that sense of paranoid conspiracy. I was worried, though, that people were going to identify with this, and because in the film there's just wholesale killing of innocent bystanders who, oops, might be taken over by the Uber program, you know, so you have to waste them anyway. I really found that troubling to my mind, and then, of course, with Columbine, that seemed to find a manifestation that here's these kids who were imitating that violence down to the trench coats and the guns and the heartless killing, the systematic killing, and then, of course, now these subsequent events. Of course, in the wake of the Columbine events, I was leaving the country to go to a consciousness conference in London, and as I was leaving, it was on all the news stories, all the news channels, as I was leaving the country, how many copycats were popping up, how many different rings of kids, thankfully, stopped before committing acts that they had been inspired by the Columbine events. So,
yeah, and, you know, one thing that, I don't know how important this is, but, and, you know, with the caveat that I've never been in a terrible life or death situation, aside from just, you know, driving up and down I-35, you know, but it struck me as odd that you would read in the accounts of the shootings yesterday that there were people who were told to line up against the wall and by this shooter, and so they obeyed because there was a gun pointed at them, and they just lined up against the walls and then began to shoot them.
Yeah.
You know, if everybody had decided to make themselves a moving target at that moment, I remember that my grandmother years ago said, if anybody, Mac, ever points a gun at you and tells you to get in the car, start running, because at least you got a chance.
Yeah. Well, and
why wasn't anybody fighting? A few people jumped out of windows, and there was some heroic action by a professor who shut the door and told his kids to jump out the windows. But, you know, I mean,
again, yeah, well, it seems like, why don't people jump them? I mean, I don't know if I would be able to overcome my fear in the presence of a gun to jump somebody and try to wrestle it from them. And certainly that's a dangerous thing to do, but yeah.
But running would be a good idea, or but then, you know, you got no shot if you just stand there.
Yeah.
God forbid we should find ourselves, but I hope that anyone considering this would, you know, try to remember that should you ever find yourself in a situation where someone is pointing a gun at you, fight. You got no shot if you just stand there. You've got no. I mean, you're at the mercy of somebody who's already pointing a gun at you, and you. But I guess, you know, years of watching movies where somebody, all right, everybody, you know, stick them up, you know, and they point the gun, everybody backs up. That somehow that's been programmed into the consciousness. Is that how you react? You know, well, okay, we won't make a move. No, don't do that. If somebody points a gun at you, they already got bad intentions and they're capable of anything. They're not normal. They're dangerous. Try to take the gun away from them. Or if that doesn't seem like a good option, run. And if you can't run, then just throw yourself at them. I mean, you know, but it's as if really that there's this programming there that, I mean, how could that many people be killed?
Passively.
I
think, again, it gets to this, as much as we've been desensitized to violence and as much as we've been, that desensitization can lead to people being able to perpetuate violence, I think we're also dealing with the pacification of humanity, the promotion of herd-like behavior, victimhood mentality.
And the inability to distinguish between reality and a television show,
yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I think that's a lot to do with it. But, well, again, you've been listening to PSYOP Radio, and I guess we should probably just let's wrap this up, Mac. I know
I believe we covered a lot of ground.
We did too.
I can't believe how much we covered, but we really did in 1 hour.
Yeah. Well, folks, you've been listening to PSYOP Radio here on Anomaly Radio with Mac White and Smiles Lewis, and we do this thing every Tuesday night between 7 and 8, and we've gone a little bit over, but hey, that's live radio for you. Thanks for listening, and again, if you are experiencing psychological distress, by all means, don't commit a violent act. Look for help, because there are people who care and want to help you. So look online for services like suicidehotline.com and/or phone numbers like 1-800-273-8255 or 1-800-SUICIDE. And
to make it easy for you, go to psyopradio.com, where you can find links for those services.
And for all the articles that we've been discussing tonight. Again, you can find out more about Mac at MacWhite.com, and you can find out more about the show at SYOPRadio.com, AnomalyRadio.com, and MacWhite.
And we're saying good night.
Good night.
Hi there, this is Lauren Coleman of CryptoMundo.com, and you're listening to Anomaly Radio.
Father, can you hear?